Blog Talk Radio.
Up this morning, looking for my shoes. Look behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? Tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
I want to do something with my mom since we don't have any announcements
tonight to really make. William, Tom?
Yes?
We're going to call my mom.
Cool.
Let's do it. We're going to prank her, and we're going to see how long we can keep her on the phone. Now, my mom's not a phone person, but she does listen to recordings. So this might work. And, William, since my mom knows my voice very well, you came up with this little routine, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to be fantastic. And I think my mom will actually stay on the phone for this.
Well, get ready. So, this is going to be a doozy.
So what we're going to do, Tom, you and I, we're going to put our phones on mute because if we start laughing, we don't want my mom to pick up on the fact that we're laughing. Are you okay with that, Tom?
I'm okay with that.
All right. Okay. Okay, we're about to put our phones on mute. I got my mom's number in the switchboard. This is going to be fun. Of all the things
all right,
she has done to me. Of all the things
I'll see on the other side.
To me pulling up. I get to get her back. I feel like Bam Bam and Jackass. Except I'm not going to beat my mom up while she's going potty. Okay, are we ready?
Yep, we're ready. Well, let's do it.
William, you got your recording voice on? You got it all lit?
Oh, yeah. I am ready to roll.
All right, let's do this. What happened? Hold on, let's try this again.
Okay.
Works for me.
It rang. Good. I'm supposed to call somebody. Hold on.
Whoops. Wow. Francie sounds just like her mom.
Yeah.
It does. Hold on.
I guess you pranked us.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah. We'll get this.
Four times charm.
We're going to...
Yep.
Oh, no! Watch this. She's probably listening to us.
Yeah, probably.
Something or... Oh, no!
Uh-oh.
Okay, you guys talk about something interesting. I'm going to try and figure this out.
Oh, okay.
Talk amongst yourselves. Any announcements
talk
from you two?
Ourselves. So how are we doing, Tom?
Oh, not too bad. Kind of chilling, taking it easy. This week, not really writing a lot, just kind of working on my story idea and then, you know, trying to figure out where I'm going, you know, with it. I'm ahead of the game, so I figure I got... What did you say?
Now, is that the Leprechaun one that they were working on?
Finished that one already.
Nice.
People got their wishes, but they didn't, you know, they couldn't deal with them real well.
Oops.
You know, they got more than, you know... Careful what you wish for, you just might get it, and they did. So, Like one guy wished to be, you know, wealthy, you know, filthy rich and wealthy, but he bought himself a sports car with his money from he won from a lottery, and he wrecked it and he ended up being a quadriplegic. So I couldn't really enjoy his money, you know. And another one, she wanted all kinds of power and everything, and she was moving up the executive ladder, and while they were, you know, inspecting a power plant and everything, she got the power. She got accidentally electrocuted and fried. So, you know, kind of stuff
like
that.
Old Sparky.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, gee. You know, she shouldn't have been where she was and all that. And then what I'm working on now is getting ready to plan to write it out. I'm trying to figure out how to begin it. It's called Ravaged. And basically, it's they put this man on trial out in the Pacific Northwest in like the 1800s and stuff. And they're basically, you know, okay, he's a big hulking, you know, big, you know, 6 foot, almost 7 foot tall, you know, heavy set man. And he appears to be a mute and, you know, he doesn't talk. And, you know, they're accusing him of ravaging some of the, you know, one of the women in nearby, you know, just outside of town. And so, they, you know, they put him on trial and all this, and they got a, you know, a lawyer and all that, you know, to avoid lynching him and stuff. And so finally they, something happens to some other woman while they're in court, and they find out, you know, somebody else had been ravaged. And so, well, it's obvious it isn't him, you know, and all that. So they end up freeing him, and he goes off back in the back of the woods. He runs into these, you know, Sasquatch, and he goes, you know, well, your hair should grow back real soon. He goes, well, it took you long enough to kind of get me out of here to play this game with the human. So it turned out he was, you know, you don't realize it was, he was, you know.
Wow.
You know, so.
Now tell me that you did not name him Mongo.
Nope. Nope, not no
good.
Nothing from the Blazing Saddles. No, no,
hey,
no, I wouldn't do that.
You guys,
so that's the story I'm working on now.
Yeah,
you know, I got a few more like that, but you know, just
my mom's calling.
Okay.
All right, let's put ourselves on mute. She's calling us back. Hold on, okay.
Okay.
All right.
You ready, William?
Hello, and
here.
Thank you for calling Movie Phone.
There is a really bad reverberation on your end that is causing room.
You know
that
the name of the movie you want to see? Press 1 now. To browse for movie titles, press 2 now.
Oh, it's your friend because it's not us.
If you know the name of the movie you want to see, press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now.
Oh, are you serious? What?
You know the name of the movie you want to see. Press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now.
What should I do?
You don't realize it.
You need to get to the point.
You know the name of the movie you
want to
see. Press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now.
Oh, cool.
Oh, I just realized that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you.
Get to the point. They're thinking there's something terrible wrong with you.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. If you know the name of the movie you want to see, press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now. I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. If you know the name of the movie you want to see, press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now.
I'm not very good at this phone stuff.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. If you know the name of the movie you want to see, press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now. I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. You know the name of the movie you want to see. Press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now. I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. If you know the name of the movie you want to see, press 1 now. To browse current movie titles, press 2 now. I'm sorry, I didn't understand you.
We're going to try and call her. We're going to give this one more try. I am not giving up on her. Wait. Oh. All right. I don't know. I guess she was talking to somebody. Why do you call somebody and talk to somebody else? Well, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. That was kind of funny. Though. We're going to get her, though. We're going to get her one time. We're going to get her. All right, let's bring on our guest. It's Mark Allen I hope I pronounced this right. Pilgrim? Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hello. Hello.
Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, good morning.
How are you?
Doing good.
You know,
how about yourself?
I'm a box of fluffy ducks. I really am. I really hope Bambi didn't try and do that to her mother, I tell you. God, yeah.
Well, happy to give you some Monday morning chuckles, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give you a morning chuckle. I went to my local garden centre the other day to get some bits for my pond, and I bought myself a goldfish for my pond. And on my way back, I went in my local supermarket. I went up to the fishmonger, so I had this fish in a bag of water. And I said, excuse me. I said, have you got any fish cakes? And he said, no, I'm sorry, it was sold out. I said, well, that's a pity. It's his birthday today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God. He must have loved it.
Yeah.
So how are things on the other side of that big lake that's between us?
The Atlantic Ocean. Actually, I'm a lot nearer to you than I would be if I was on the other side of England. I'm in the southwest. I'm in Cornwall, which is that little southwestern peninsula. Have you ever heard of Land's End? It's quite a famous. It's the southernmost point of, or the westernmost point of the UK, and it's like a post. And you've got all these bars coming off of it, and it tells you how far it is to New York in one direction, how far it is to John O'Groats, which is like the northern, like North Scotland, and all these different directions. And people go there now, and it's a tourist attraction now. And you get your photo taken with it. It's world famous, Land's End. And Cornwall, of course, the coast of Cornwall is famous for things like Poldark and various other places. Race of Titanic. We're talking to William about that. Race of Titanic was filmed at, or a scene of it was filmed at St. Ives. So, yeah, Cornwall is famous across the world, to be honest. Beautiful part of the world as well. Okay.
You know, and of course, you know, considering all the signs they have with the bars, that almost has to make one ask the ultimate question. How far to Tipperary?
Tipperary?
Yes.
Oh, that's probably a fair old way, yeah. That's Ireland, Tipperary. That's is it Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland? I'm not sure, but that's Ireland. That's sort of Father Ted country, you know. He was talking about British comedy last week with the chap from Australia, he would have, he'd know about Father Ted. So, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh. So, now, tell me, I know you've been working very much so with your current project, which is the Ballad of Lucy Sands. And although famous, very, very famous over in England, over here in the States, with the exception of a few people that are fans of period murder dramas and things along those lines, it's not that much of a very well-known tale. So, would you mind kind of sharing some highlights without giving away any spoilers?
Well, you know what? It's funny you should say it's famous over here. It's not famous over here, not by a long shot. I mean, I've never heard of it. I know about the famous murders and things like that, the people that are famous, like Willington Place, you know, John Christie and the acid bath murder and Crippen and people like that, all the people that are famous because they went, for argument's sake, they went to the gallows. But this murder, it took place in 1881, and it is pretty unheard of. I can tell you this now, that it's never ever been filmed. The story has never been filmed. They've never even written a book about it. And all you'll find in print about Lucy Sands is maybe a chapter in a book about murders, or, you know, like little journals in a crime magazine. It is literally unheard of. It's been covered up through the years to a certain degree. And this girl was an orphan. She was an orphan. She lived in Northern Ireland. She lived in Belfast. And her father died when she was, I don't know, I think she was about 10 years old. And then her mother died a couple of years later. And because she was orphaned with her little brother, They were emigrated over to Cumberland. Modern day, it's known as Cumbria. Cumbria was formed in the 70s as an authority, as a county. But they were shipped off to their grandmother and great aunt, and they lived in Christian Street in Workington. And this girl basically had a new start in life. You know, in them days, it wasn't unusual for children to be orphaned, you know, because people didn't live that long, did they? And it's one of them things. But when she was 16, she met the hands of a truly horrific murder. She was in harm's way. She was out with her friends on the 1st of December, 1881. She was out with her friends, and one thing led to another, and she was with people, and the last people that saw her alive said that she walked off in a certain direction. She claimed she was going to meet a young man from a train. That turned out to be, you know, false. That, you know, she was meeting somebody local, and that was the last time she was seen. And she was found 3 months later to the day under a pile of rocks, and she'd been slaughtered basically in cold blood, and the body was horrendous. She'd been feasted on by vermin through the winter, so like her calves were gone, her stomach, you know, the soft parts of her stomach, parts of her face, her bust, her hands. And it just took them a while to actually get over the shock of finding the body before they could actually begin an investigation. And what this film actually tells is the story of Lucy. It tells you the story of Lucy. It tells you about how she was found, and it tells you about the hearing afterwards, where they got a suspect who, you know, they had to have a hearing in order to take it to trial. And it's all about how the police investigation and various things that witnesses were manipulated and threatened. And they just, it just all got covered. It got covered up. The suspect, you know, got away with it. Now, whether or not he done it is in the story of the film. I'm not going to reveal that. It might be somebody else. It might not. But it's the powers that be, and he got away with it. You know, whether he done it or not, whoever killed him, whoever killed Lucy, never got caught.
Well, would it be all right if I kind of threw out a fan theory about it, and you can let me know if I'm in the right direction?
Go on, then.
Okay. I think that Professor Plum did it with a candlestick in the conservatory.
Very
good. Yeah, it could have been, couldn't it?
Thank you.
It could have been Darth Vader or, you know, Dracula or somebody like that. But that's the thing about this. I mean, you know, this story has never been told. And as I say, everything that I've told you so far is in public knowledge. You know, for those that look into it, like Steve Baldwin did, it is in public knowledge. But the stuff that he found out is not in public knowledge, you know.
Right. So that's definitely going to be very interesting once it finally releases.
Yeah.
Now, for yourself, I mean, you're a very, very versatile actor to begin with. What did you do to prepare yourself for your role within this? Did you, besides going to the actual village of Workington and actually following in Lucy's footsteps, what else did you entail?
Well, I mean, yeah, we've been up to Workington. We've been filming in Workington. In actual fact, we filmed Lucy's funeral in Workington. And this was a wonderful day's filming. It was very, very emotional. Because we were in the site in St. John's Church, and we were filming in there. We had undertakers. We had a coffin with her nameplate on it, and we had a church full of school children that were all dressed down, you know, all in ill-fitting clothes, so they looked like orphans. They were from a local workhouse, and, you know, for the timeline of the film. But get this, we're actually all sitting there. We're watching the Reverend Priestley, I believe his name was. Steve actually had the transcript of what he said at the funeral, word for word. And this actor, Simon, he was up there reading this thing off and talking to the congregation. And at the same time, we're all sitting there. And those of us that are in the know, we're all sitting there. And we know that this girl is not 100 yards away in the ground outside, you know, this story we're telling. And, you know, you can't write the impact that has on the cast and the crew and the sensation, the whole overall vibe of the scene as it plays out. I mean, obviously, there's bits of it you do over and over again to get different angles and get different takes and close-ups and all that. Things get done with films. It's not like being on stage in the theatre once the curtain's open. You get one bang at it and that's it. With this, you get, you know, it's done over and over and over again, and it becomes very tiring. And the more you think about it, the more it really has an impact on your performance. And as I say, we had all these wonderful children, and their chaperones were like school teachers and parents. And we even had one guy, his name was Mark as well, funny enough, or is Mark, should I say. We had one guy who was just a chaperone for his daughter, a little girl called Amy. And he ended up playing a copper because we needed a couple of local people to play coppers to go into the Helena Thompson Museum and arrest the suspect, because we were filming at the Helena Thompson Museum. And he was there and somebody hadn't turned up. And I said, well, will this fit? Yeah, they stuck it on him. Yeah, go on in. So he just, and these were all the local people, the people in Cumbria, in Workington. But this grave is outside, in the ground outside, and it, it emotional day. I was in tears. I'll be honest with you. I was, you know, I was a right state. I wasn't well either. So, you know.
But that's good though. Cause, I mean, you know,
we have a caller.
That's when you know. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have a caller. It's area code 111. 111-1111.
Yes.
Hello.
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 Hiya.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about you?
You got the same accent as Mark.
Yes.
Well, first of all, I think
that
I'll say good morning to you then.
Yeah. Good morning to yourself.
And who is this?
Goodness.
This is Leah Smith.
Lucy Sands herself in the flesh.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Wow, wow, wow. Well, thank you very much for actually waking up early to join in with the fun.
Oh, it's all right. Don't worry about it.
So how was it like working on set with you and Mark together? Was there good chemistry?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, Mark is so easy to get on with, honestly. The scenes that I've done with Mark, yeah, definitely one of the more fun scenes to do. Yeah, he's really great to work with, definitely.
I would guess
excellent.
So if you wake up at 4 a.m. to call him and say hi.
Sorry?
You know, she said that you would guess so if you're willing to wake up this early to say hi.
Yeah, of course. Commitment.
Can I jump in? I've got to tell you something absolutely remarkable about Leah. At the time, the first time I met her, she was 15, right? And she walked on the set at Boscombe Junction here at in Bodmin, it's the steam railway. And the first time I actually met her, I was sitting in a makeup tent and they were starting to, I just said, hello, I'm Mark, I'm playing Isaac. Oh, hello. And they were just starting to, Michelle Bromley, the makeup artist, she was just starting to put the a scar on her. I can't recall if it was a cheek or a throat. And I went, obviously, I don't need long in a makeup tent because I'm damn near perfect. You know, if they do anything else to me, they'll have the ladies fainting everywhere. I can't hang around for long. So I go off on the set, right? I go off on the set. I don't see Leah again for about 5 or 6 hours. And the next time I saw her, she was just covered. She was like the Walking Dead. And I don't mean George Romero Walking Dead. I mean like, you know, like the bodies on Everest at the Hillary Step and the balcony that they can't bring down. That's what she, if I was to explain what it was like in the mind's eye, that's what she looked like, and it looked absolutely amazing. And you know, the makeup artist said that she was working on that for hours and hours, and she never complained, she never moaned, she never this, she never that. It was freezing cold. It was November, you know, which in Cornwall is relatively mild compared to the rest of the UK, but here. And, you know, it was still freezing cold. And she didn't grumble once. She was as good as gold. And all she had to do was play a corpse all day. But she was absolutely remarkable. Absolutely, no doubt about it. She was brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Well, think of it like this. I mean, that's first of all, that's great. And second of all, you know, I know you're a little on the young side, so you may not remember, but Mark would probably know. There was a very famous film called The Big Chill that came out in the 80s. And believe it or not, that was one of Kevin Costner's very first films, and he played a corpse.
Yeah, he wasn't even in it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so. Cast. They later became all stars, great, you know, they're great, well-known actors, all of them in it.
Mm-hmm. You know, so you're off to a great start if you're able to manage the, you know, the harsh English weather like that without complaining. That's that's absolutely commendable right there.
Oh, it's fine. All the makeup artists were lovely. We were just like gossiping about like Tom Hardy for 2 hours.
Well, hey, I mean, you got to do something to pass the time. That's for sure.
No, but, yeah, it was Didn't recognize.
And then now,
the worst part about being on a movie set is waiting.
Yeah. Pardon? Oh. Yeah, she was saying the worst part of working on a film set is the waiting.
In it, literally.
Very true.
Yeah. Let me ask you both this. I have you both on. What do you guys think about American movies compared to British movies and English movies and across the sea movies? Are they different or are they pretty much all the same?
Well, the difference between American and British cinema.
Yeah, I think that's what she was asking.
I'd say they're pretty different, I think. I don't know, I guess, you know, when you think of, like, British cinema, you think of, you know, proper, like, gritty, I don't know, like, Trainspotting or something. But, But, yeah, dry humour, do you know what I mean? But, yeah, I don't know. I love American cinema.
What's your favorite American movie?
Oh my god. Let me think. I love Tarantino, obviously.
Taxi Driver,
everything. Yeah. All the classics.
My favorite American one would probably be The Thing, John Carpenter's 1992 Thing. Yeah, that would be my favorite. But my
fiance Nick on The Thing. He is all about The Thing. He loves that movie.
Oh yeah. that's almost like the Addams Family. That's the magic word.
Yeah. my all-time favorite film actually is a British film. It's called The Wild Geese. It was about mercenaries in Africa, Richard Burton and Hardy Kruger and Roger Moore. That is my all-time favorite film.
Wild Geese, that's a classic.
I love that film. Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah,
that was
a good one.
Good actioner.
Now, Leah, what are some of your plans? After Lucy, are you going to continue pursuing acting or?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what else to do, but definitely. I think plans to go to drama school, kind of route. Go take drama at university.
Good.
Yeah.
Leah,
do
you hope to train the classical way like I did? I trained at the Hub Theatre School at Cornwall. It was very classical. It was very hands-on. And do you hope to do that, or do you hope to do something that's a bit more towards the creative, the background sort of stuff? Like the new modern stuff that they've got, especially with theatres now with the new lights and the new this and the new that, or would you rather learn the classic methods?
I love it all, to be honest. I just want to be, like a well-rounded actor. And I think a well-rounded actor is just someone who's, a bit of everything, really. So, yeah, I would love to be, like well-versed in Shakespeare and then also, kind of modern...
Theatre,
film, all of it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Now, definitely if you can pull off Shakespeare, I'll have to give you an even bigger applause because that takes more memorization than even I can handle, and I'm an author by trade.
Yeah, I've been doing Shakespeare for years, honestly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Not too shabby then. You can't see it because it's audio, but I am applauding you.
Oh, thank you very much.
No problem.
Have you,
Yeah.
Have you ever done Brecht? That's really.
Sorry?
If you can handle Brecht. Have you ever done Brecht?
Yeah, I have.
Have you ever done like
Brecht in
school. Yeah. Oh, that is. I done Aztec the Judge in the Caucasian Chalk Circle one time. I actually done it in the Huffy at the school, but I weren't Aztec in that. But I've done it professionally, and I've done Aztec the Judge. And you know what? No matter how many times I've seen that or read it, it never gets easier. It is so dark and grim, and you know, it's tiring. You know, there's some times when you can go to the theatre and you're doing something, and you just know that the people, you get the feeling, because you know it so well and it's so grim, you get the feeling that the people in the audience are cheering the back of the seat in front of them, you know. They're not, because they know what they're going to see, but it's just so, it's so dark and depressing. And I think that's what sums up British drama to a certain degree, because most British dramas are depressing. You get great ones, like, I mean, on the television, you get great things like the cop, the police things, and things like Line of Duty and stuff like that. But it's, you know, the theatre, it's musicals mostly now. It seems to be here.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Some reason.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Now, one thing I was very curious. This was for you, Mark. Before Lucy, I know one of your earlier projects was actually doing Wyatt Earp, and I was curious. You know, was it difficult to actually try to pull off an American accent? You know, coming from Cornwall.
Well. I don't actually come from Cornwall, but I get what you're saying. I'm English. No, it wasn't. It's actually, there's not a lot in it. I mean, an accent is, it's about rhythm as much as pronunciation. It's about having a certain thing in the voice, you know, ringing certain vowels a certain way and the speed of the speech. But Jerry Clark, the bloke who wrote The Vendetta, which is what you're talking about, he was so helpful. You know, with how he wanted Wyatt to come across. It was more or less me to a certain degree anyway. It was just it was a case of changing a few mannerisms and you know, just slowing down the voice a bit, because I speak quite fast. Having a bit of vibrato in the voice on certain vowels and certain sounds, that's what gives you an accent. So I actually found it quite, and I've seen enough. Well, you've just said, you know, what's your favourite American movies? Both Blair and myself, and I've seen enough movies to sort of think, well, that's how the New Yorkers are. That's how they talk in Chicago, or that's how they talk in, you know, the Deep South or whatever. Because you, just like here in England, you've got very regional accents over there, you know.
Oh yeah.
So. It's just the same here, you know. So, yeah, found that pretty fascinating. And that was one of the things that's one of the weird things about this Lucy Sands story being so obsolete, because this Lucy Sands story takes place at exactly the same time in history, and yet Wyatt Earp is all over the films and the books and the internet and papers and all that, and yet Lucy was in the same time, and yet there's nothing out there, which is what makes this film and this story so unique. This isn't Star Wars. This isn't Dracula or Sherlock Holmes or Harry Potter. It's never been done before. We're different. We're very different. And Leah would agree with that, I'm sure. I'm sure Leah would chime in and have something to say about that.
Pardon?
Now, Leah, one thing I do want to ask you, this is something that Mark had mentioned to me, actually a few days ago. He had shared about some advice he had given you about when you were trying to memorize one of the scenes in the film, and it was with your script and using highlighters. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, would you mind sharing that with us? Because one of the things that we do on Francie's show is we also try to find different types of advice and pointers for not only established people, but also the fans that are hopeful and high aspirations for pursuing their own venue and dreams.
Yeah, I think with like memorizing lines, it's repetition. But Mark's technique was, because we're so used to when you read a script and it's all highlighted, you're so used to seeing the highlighted lines as your lines. And so when you mm-hmm. when you actually do the opposite, you end up, the lines that aren't highlighted stand out more. And so you actually, take it in a bit more and, kind of get to grips with it a bit more.
Wow. And then now, did that actually, did you work that in, was it when you had done your monologue as well too?
Oh, the monologue.
Did that help on?
The monologue was 6 pages.
I know.
The monologue, how did I do that? I went page by page and, I think with something that's with monologues, it's just working in the physicality really. And then just kind of, like muscle memory, so just learning it through that kind of way rather than just like,
wow.
Just reading words off the page. But yeah.
Well, now I'm going to turn the table around just a quick second here. Tom, do you think you could memorize 6 pages?
Nope. I'm limited to just being a writer. I can remember what I wrote, but I can't, I'll never be an actor. Besides, I've got a face for radio, and I can do it. It's a grind. I kind of stand in awe of people that can memorize and do their lines and play that role. I never, of course, I got it was pretending as a kid, but they were acting out my characters when I'm writing them. But I can't do it. Nope.
Yeah. To pull off 6 pages like that, that is absolutely impressive. So, you nailed it.
I'd learn the 6 pages and then he'd end up saying like, oh, we're not going to film it today. We're going to film it actually next month. So, and I'm also going to add another page. So just, by the way, get on that. And I'm like, it's fine. Don't worry. It's not like I've got
A-levels
forever. But, yeah.
Wow.
So in other words, Theodore, congratulations. Don't, just forget pages 5 through 15 because we're going to have some better ones next week.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Or like her change up. He gave me it back and then he changed like one word or like, and then I have to relearn the thing and just, I can't change that one word. And he's like, actually, that's not the line.
That's an incredible talent. It's almost like doing it on the fly,
Yeah.
Yeah. In actual fact, to a certain degree, there's nothing worse than learning something and then having to forget it because it's been changed. Because you do it, as Leah says, it's repetition and stuff like that. You get so used to doing something a certain way, even if it's just one word in a sentence in one cue. If you've learned it, it's very hard to forget it. That takes some doing. And yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, doing it with a live audience on top of that, that's wow.
Yeah, well, with a live audience, that's in the theatre. It's already been rehearsed and all that kind of thing. With a film, the only live audience you've got is the crew. So
yeah.
9 times out of 10, you get a few scenes a week or so before that are like word perfect. Right, that's what you're going to be doing on such and such a day. And you've got that little time to learn them. So it's not that bad. But as we've already said, if something gets changed at last, I mean, there's been times when we've learned a script and we've gone and done a certain scene, but because somebody hasn't turned up, it's had to change because something, for instance, like someone's been cast in a certain part, but they can't get there because there's no trains or something. And little things like that, you have to change on, as you say, on the fly. So it does, but I mean, with monologue. It's how on earth she done that. It's phenomenal. If anyone wants to go and see it, go to the website. It's called LucySands.com, and all the trailers are on there. There's stuff about the cast and the crew and the story. And there's also links to the Facebook page. But if you want to see it, look at a thing. It's called Lucy's Monologue, and you'll see it for yourself. And as Leah says, it's like, what is it, 7 pages, 6 pages? And it's phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal. LucySands.com.
Now I know, obviously, for a lot of us, we're... We also like to do a little bit of things dealing with horror, and just the thought of having an extra page of that you need to practice and recite, that I think that can probably constitute absolute terror for anybody that's a fan of the genre,
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. Now, what other thing I was curious about, Mark? Earlier, many years ago, when you and I had first crossed paths, you actually were putting together a show based off of some of the comedy styles of the late Dave Allen. For those over here in the States.
Oh yeah,
Dave Allen was a
very
famous Irish comedian, and luckily YouTube has his stuff, but they don't actually have the DVDs available for purchase here in the States because a lot of his material is still considered risque, even though it's not swearing or anything along those lines. What was it like actually, trying to emulate somebody as, as cynical but also funny as he was? Easy way?
That was a case of acting, basically. What I'd done was there was a series that was on television here in the early 90s, and he was on ITV. It weren't BBC. He was on like a commercial channel. And because I was at the theatre school at the time, and because I was working and stuff like that as well, I never got to see it. So what I done was I recorded them on VHS, one after the other, on the same tape. And for years and years, I had this 1 3-hour tape with the whole series on. And this series had never been released on video in the sense of going out to buy it or Laserdisc or subsequently DVD or anything like that. And what I done was I picked all these gags out of it, and I put them all together into one sort of hour worth of show. And then I went and done it for the, what was it? It was the Cornwall Air Ambulance. No, not the Cornwall Air Ambulance. The Padstow Lifeboat. That's what it was for. The RNLI. And I went and done that at Padstow, standing room only, and I done it for charity. I didn't need a microphone. I was in a little theatre. It's actually called the Little Theatre, and it's a converted chapel. And I had a microphone, and I had a microphone stand, it weren't on. It was just as a prop. So I was acting. I became Dave Allen. So I had all the things where he looks at the audience a certain way. He punctuates certain things that he says with looks to the audience. But the weird thing was, when I finished doing it, people come up to me and they said, oh, why didn't you do this gag? Or why didn't you do that gag? Or why didn't you do that gag? And I said, the reason I can do that is because you just asked me that. And the reason being is they were citing all the gags from the old BBC series, that, which, as I say, had been available on video, like compilations. And so that's why they knew them, because they might have only watched them last week, whereas I had this series from the early 90s on tape. That presumably no one's seen for 20 years. I mean, this was back in 2005. Funny enough, the day I'd done it, I got back home and I put the telly on, and it was about midnight by the time I was home, and it was the 3rd of October 2005, and they turned around and they said that Roddy Barker had died. And I cried my eyes out. I literally cried my eyes out. Have you heard of Roddy Barker over there? The spoke that was in Porridge and open all hours. You heard
Oh,
him?
Yeah, I certainly have.
Thank you for coming, Mrs. Pepperstone. You know, Even at, but that's, I just done it. I just took it as an act. I just done it as an actor. I didn't do it to rip him off or anything like that. I done it. I got his voice. I got his timing. And like I say, his mannerisms, more than anything, it was his mannerisms, his way that looking at the audience and things like that. It was, it went really well. It did go really well. I was really proud of it, to be honest.
Now,
it was my own personal tribute.
So now you know, this does force me to ask one question. You know, this is something that always made his shows, you know, so popular. Did you have the glass of whiskey on hand?
No, what I had was ginger ale.
Okay.
Ginger ale because by all accounts, I looked into it. By all accounts, that's what he had. It was a prop. There was just an assumption it was whiskey, but by all accounts, it wasn't. Whether or not that's true, and I heard that from the wrong person, I don't know. But you know, I didn't want to drink on stage, to be honest. I didn't have cigarette either. I mean, back then, that you could smoke in a theatre and indoor, you could still smoke in a pub, things like that. But I didn't want to do that either. For a start, there was a gag in it where I'd taken this from that particular theory. There was a gag in it where he's on about being an ex-smoker, you know. So I thought there's
mm-hmm.
definitely no point smoking. So, yeah. It was great fun, you know.
Awesome. And then now Leo, you know, are there any genres, you know, film-wise, you know, that you kind of seem to have more of a draw towards that you would like to actually, you know, pursue if given an opportunity?
You know what I'd love? I just love, like, British comedy. Like, I would love to be in, like, a classic British sitcom or something like that. Or, like,
mm-hmm.
or like a dark comedy. Like, do you know Fleabag?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
Phoebe
Waller-Bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love mm-hmm. that. Like, something like that. Or, yeah, just, like, yeah, I just love, like, our sense of humour. So I think something, because I haven't, you know, being able to do that yet, so yeah.
But that's right. I mean, you know, there's always the possibility and the opportunity. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you just have to follow your passion and let the doors come to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you know, how about you, Mark? Now that you're very, very involved with period stuff. What's next on the agenda?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I honestly couldn't say. I mean, I've turned a couple of things down over the years that maybe I shouldn't have done. But then at the same time, I sort of think I'm glad I did, if you know what I mean, because I think being successful is being happy with what you do. I mean, you see people on the films and on the television and that all the time where you sort of think that really doesn't suit you, that isn't a part for you, you know, and they're obviously doing it for the money, which is understandable, and I've never really felt that way about my work. I'd rather go and do something on the stage and get next to nothing for it than do something that I'd hate to do, you know. I'm very picky. I am very picky with certain things, to be honest.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being picky and selective. Look at Olivier and the way that he made selections.
Yeah, my attitude is if I wouldn't want to watch it, then I wouldn't want to do it. You know, there's certain plays that I've read where I've sort of thought, ah, no, I'm not touching that with a barge pole, you know, and there's certain ones that I've read and I've thought, yeah, that'll be all right. And then by the time I'm halfway through doing it, I'm thinking, oh, God, no, I wish I hadn't, you know. So, it, you know, it is possible to make mistakes. But, you know, generally my rule is if something doesn't make me want to put it down, you know, if I can't put something down till I've got to the end of it, then I want to get it. Whereas if I'm struggling to read it, then if I'm struggling to read it, let's face it, as Leah said, if I'm struggling to read it, I'm going to be struggling to read it 100 times, which ultimately is what you've got to do is you, if you've got to learn it. I mean, that's another thing. If you when you're learning lines, you don't just learn your own. You have to know the whole thing, whether it's the whole scene that you're in or the whole show from start to finish. You need to know it all. All it takes is for you to be on stage in the lights and yawn, go deaf for a few seconds, and then when your hearing comes back, you haven't got a clue where you are. You've actually as simple as that, how you can lose your place on stage. So here we go. If you can't read something once, you're not going to be able to read it 50 times to learn it. So what's the point of agreeing to do it? You know? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know.
You also say you want to be entertained by what the material you're going to do, too.
Mm.
Is that correct?
Yeah, you need to be moved. You need to be moved. You need to find it funny, or you need to be able to think, that's making me want to cry, or that's making me want to cheer, or that's giving me shivers, that's frightening, or that's that, or the other. If you don't get any of those responses from the pages and in your mind's eye, then it's not going to work for you on stage. And it certainly ain't going to work for you on a film when you're doing it, you know, five or six times, you know, each sentence in front of a camera. You, eventually your energy goes down, your rhythm goes down, you start to lose, you know, it's not going to work. You have to be 100% committed to it as it is on the page, as words and words alone. Which is why one of the reasons why this Lucy thing is so dramatic, not dramatic, but it's so powerful, because I want to know what happens next. Each time I get a few pages, I think, right, where's this going? What's happening? And it's just, you know, and the connections that the film has got. I mean, Leah will tell you, back in, I believe it was February, they had... let me get this right. Her name was June, and she was her third great grandfather was Lucy's great uncle. In other words, he was the brother of the grandmother and the great aunt that she went to live with when she was orphaned. Talking about connections with how we filmed in the church where she's in the ground outside, it's just incredible. You know, to have that kind of connection with the real story. Most actors can only dream of that.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
No. No. Now, Leah, one thing I do want to ask, you know, how much of yourself do we see, you know, within the film versus, versus the characters? I know there's... you know, a lot of actors that, you know, kind of go one step past method acting and improv. And, you know, like for example, Heath Ledger, when he became the Joker and actually intimidated the rest of the cast members, you know, things like that. You know, so how much of you versus Lucy, you know, do we see within the film? Is there much of a difference? Not too much, or?
I think something that was really important to me when, you know, approaching the role, I think, was to not overcomplicate it, not try to make the character what I thought, you know, a period drama character should be. Just get to, you know, the core of the character, which is really that she's just, Lucy is any other 16-year-old girl that you would have met, and that's the whole point of the story, is that, you know, she could have been your neighbor. Do you know what I mean? And so I tried to really just focus on the kind of just like youthful, just teenagerness of the character. Just talk to Lucy, chatting to her mates the way I would chat to my mates. You know, not. I mean, I wasn't in an Irish accent all day, but. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so just try to really...
Well,
yeah,
try to really still, I mean, you know, if you can pull it off the right way, that's also excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, Blog Talk Radio is actually about to cut us off. We've been off the air for 5 minutes, and then they give us, like, a couple of minutes afterwards to finish up. How can everybody reach you that wants to contact you?
Are we on there?
Yeah.
Well, we're off the air, but this is, like, considered the after party. People can go back and listen to this the next day.
Yeah, okay. Go on, Leah.
I have a Twitter, Leah M. Smith. Just, you know, type that in. You'll find me.
Okay.
Okay.
And Mark?
And do you have Facebook and everything else?
Is it?
I only have Twitter, but... Bit young for Facebook.
Okay. Understandable there.
If you want to reach the film, the best thing, you know, if there's anybody listening who's been struck by even one sentence of what we've said, like the obscurity of the story, or the fact that we filmed the girl's funeral where she was, you know, interred, things like that. If anyone is even slightly struck with any of that story, anything that Leah said, anything that I said, God forbid, then please head to the website. It's lucysands.com. So www.lucy, which is LucySands. So it's sands as in beach sands, .com. And then from there, as I say, we've got all the things about where the film has been filmed, all the patrons like Bobbin Town Council and the railway and Helena Thompson Museum and yada yada yada. But then not only that, there's links on there for Twitter. I don't know how active it is on Twitter because I haven't been on Twitter for ages because I get fed up with it, to be honest. But the Facebook page. Head to the Facebook page, go to Facebook, search The Ballad of Lucy Sands. We're on there. For crying out loud, please, 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 if you do nothing else for the rest of your life, click like. Click that little bum at the top and share it.
We've got an Instagram as well.
Follow it. There's an Instagram.
An Instagram, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, definitely, Leah, Mark, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Lovely. Thank you.
Much success.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and definitely looking forward to the premiere.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I'll just keep the popcorn in the pantry for right now until I see the date for the release. That's all.
Well. 14th of February, here, hopefully, next year. It's the 14th of February, which is Lucy's birthday. And that's the plan. Although, obviously, with the lockdown and the coronavirus and the fact we've got an imbecile for a prime minister, there's no guarantee we're going to get it by then.
No, it's very difficult.
Yeah. But that's the plan. Excuse me, that was my lemonade coming back on me.
Whoops. but that's okay, though. I mean, we can hope for the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right, so from Francie and friends, good night all the way on the other side of the lake. Good morning. Sleep tight.
Thank you. Good morning.
Bed now.
Yeah. Some of us will go to bed for sure.
All right.
Take
good
care,
night,
everybody.
Thank you.
Up this morning, looking for my shoes. Look behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? rock away from here. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?